The new year is just around the corner and brighter days are ahead. Are you ready? If you're looking for creative ideas to drive sales, recruit talent, and get more job orders filled, you're in luck. In this episode of Lunch with Haley, the audio version, you'll hear from David Cerns, CEO at Haley Marketing, Brad Smith, Director of Social Media and SEO, Matt Lozar, Director of Recruitment Marketing, and well, me, Brad Biley, Digital Marketing Manager at Haley Marketing, as we break down our clear vision for the new year and share your marketing roadmap for 2021. I hope you'll enjoy this episode of Lunch with Haley, and of course, if you want to listen to any other Lunch with Haley episodes, you can do so by visiting lunchwithhaley.com. All right, enough from me. Let's get to the show and enjoy Lunch with Haley, the audio edition. This is your marketing roadmap for 2021.
To kind of kick things off for today, we want to really focus on the future. And the first question I want to ask everybody is, from a marketing perspective, what's going to be the industry's biggest challenge in 2021? And Brad Smith, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, sure. I think the biggest challenge, at least at the beginning of 2021, is getting over COVID, pandemic, and everything. We've had some huge challenges there. So it's learning how to sell more efficiently remotely. It's learning how to engage with candidates remotely, keeping them in the loop. And it's I think the biggest challenge in 2021 is going to be the same one we dealt with in 2020 and 2019. It's recruiting. We need to find the right people to fill the right positions.
Awesome. Brad Biley, what do you think?
For me, it's using that marketing budget and using those marketing dollars effectively. So everyone needs applicants, everyone needs job orders, and everyone has a limited marketing budget. It's just facts. So it's making sure that everything you're doing has a purpose, making sure that you're not wasting spend anywhere, making sure that everything you're deploying has purpose and meaning, and what you're doing with your marketing dollars is leading towards the bigger goal, applications and job orders. So for me, it's really making sure that that marketing budget is stretching.
Excellent. Matt, what do you think? What's going to be the biggest challenge next year?
You know, with obviously COVID carrying over to the beginning of 2021 and preparing for the webinar, I think the challenge is going to be knowing what needs to be stay remote and digital and automated, and what's going to kind of shift back a little bit, and maintaining that flexibility of improving your automation and digital transformation and making sure you're adding the right ones to help your business, but also not just falling into that trap of making everything automated and digital and remote, and staying flexible with how you work with clients and then also with candidates as well.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Let me add my two cents. So I think from a marketing perspective, next year, the biggest challenge is going to be emotion. And as you're seeing right now, as we go through the holiday season, you know, you saw everywhere on the news, you know, don't get together with your family for Thanksgiving. Don't get together with your family for Christmas. There was somebody in our organization shared a story that the negative news about COVID in the United States, we have more negative news stories related to the pandemic than any other part of the world. What's that creating? It's creating fear. It's creating anxiety. It's creating a lot of stress on people's lives. Then you've got areas of the country, ours included. School districts are in session. School districts are all remote. Businesses are shutting down. Businesses are open. I think you're going to see for the next 6 months a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety. And what does that matter about marketing? Well, if you think about placing people, it's hard to get them to go to work. And if people aren't comfortable in their home situation, they're not comfortable with their ability to help their kids, they're not comfortable with their own safety and wellness, they're going to be resistant to a change. They may not accept the job offer. They may no-show on you. They won't come in for an interview. So from a marketing perspective, how can we use, as Matt was talking about, automation? How can we use old school, talking to people, getting on the phone, getting on Zoom, when your offices are open, getting more people into the offices to talk, even if it's through a mask, to help people deal with their stress and anxiety? And as a staffing company, how can we be a source of calm for our clients and our candidates? Because if we can help ease their burden, ease their lives, more people are going to want to work with us. It's going to improve our brand. We're going to make more placements. But I think dealing with being in the staffing industry in the face of the media is going to be a huge challenge, at least through the first half of next year. All right, let's move on to our first major topic. Section one is all about recruiting. We know that most staffing companies are struggling getting people to show up for interviews and go to work. And if we went back to March of 2020 and we took out our crystal balls back then and we said, oh my gosh, we're entering a global pandemic. We've been through recessions in the staffing industry before. Every time there's a recession, what happens is job orders become scarce and we have an abundance of candidates and our recruiters don't have time to talk to people. So that's what's going to happen this time, but it didn't. We had massive unemployment, as you all know. It's rebounded to what, 6.7% or something like that. So we're doing better. But all throughout this, it's been hard to fill job orders. And our industry has actually gone down in sales by an average of 30%, despite having, for many companies, record numbers of job orders. So, Brad Smith, I'm going to ask you first, you know, why do you think we had such a challenge for the last 6 months filling those job orders?
Well, I think it's a number of things. And it was really, to me, phased. When I think about the conversations I had at the beginning of the pandemic and what I'm having now, they're really different. So at the beginning, I think it was really fear-based. So people were afraid to go to work. They were afraid to start a new assignment. They were afraid to go into a new environment. That calmed down a little bit. And that was right when extended unemployment benefits hit. So for many of our clients, they're working in light industrial, clerical space, and employees could make more sitting on the couch at home. So why in the world would they take an assignment that pays less than they would earning from their couch at home not working? Now those unemployment benefits dried up, and we did see an influx of some talent hit the market. Those were those motivated people that wanted to take that next step. Now we transition closer to where we're at today, and I think a lot of it is tied to other issues or obligations or obstacles that talent's facing. Parents, many of their kids are at home at school. Mine are at home, and it's a challenge finding daycare, finding coverage for them. And then the last phase, and where I feel like most of us are at now, is a lot of the people that are still unemployed are in areas that we don't necessarily staff for. So, for example, you look at the hospitality space, there's a wealth of available talent there, but many of our clients don't look at those people as a good fit because they don't have the experience that is needed. So as staffing companies, you know, we need to think about what we can do to better present those people, look at crossover, look at pulling people from other industries where there is still high unemployment and pull them into our industries where there really isn't high unemployment.
Thanks, Brad. And that's a really good segue. Matt, I know you're doing a lot of work with companies to try to get more value out of their recruiting. So as you're looking at next year, what do you think staffing companies are going to need to do to get their job orders filled?
I refuse to say pay more because that's the easiest answer to this question. But Brad really did an awesome job of painting the picture of safety and unemployment and childcare as the three reasons it's been hard. And as we transition into 2021, you know, I think make it really easy for people. Make it easy for them to find your job. Make it easy for them to understand what's different about, you know, your job opening that's different from their current job or the job of your competitor. You know, with your job title, with your job description, your job posting, like why should they apply for your job? And really make it easy for them. And make it easy for them to interview, to apply, to go through all of that process. Because as you know, as you said, David, earlier, emotion was what you felt 2021 is going to have a huge impact in. And people won't make change if they're uncomfortable. So we have to make them feel comfortable in making it easy for them to apply for jobs and then go through the onboarding process, I think will help fill those job orders that we hear from clients all the time. You know, the staffing issue may be down about 30% right now, but you know, what can you do to really make it easy for them to apply for those jobs?
Awesome. And Matt, you talked a little bit about advertising. I know you said don't want to say pay more, but one of the things you found from doing some research is there actually is a huge difference in advertising response rate based on pay rates. Would you mind sharing a little bit of that data?
Yeah, I looked at the data this summer when it was really challenging for companies to find results. And it was a company down in the Lehigh Valley area. And the data came where their pay rate, I think it was around $16 or $17. Once they hit that breaking point in the Lehigh Valley, their cost per application actually decreased by 20 or 30%. But if they were advertising in that $12, $13, $14 an hour pay range, their cost per application increased. And it was up by 20, 30, 40%. So you can see where people are comfortable in your market. You can see, you know, where it's a combination of unemployment benefits, the childcare challenge, obviously safety as well. But that's the data that really is impactful and shows if you're paying just a little bit more, you have those results. And, you know, Brad Smith told the story before where he was working with a client in Arizona. They increased it by $1 an hour and they had 30 job orders filled basically in a couple of days. So that's where that's a really big piece of active job seekers. They're looking for how much something's paying. And if that's a little bit more, they're more comfortable with it, they will apply.
Yeah. And one thing for everybody's benefit is to, you know, look at your analytics on your job board. For those of you using Haley's job board, you can actually look at the My Job section and see what jobs are getting what levels of views, clicks, and applies, and then compare that to your pay rates. And you're going to find there's a certain level in your market that once you hit that level, the number of pay rates skyrocket, excuse me, number of applications skyrockets. And now you can use that data to go show your clients, like, look, I've got jobs that are $11, $12, $15, $18 an hour. These are the number of applies we're getting at these pay rates. And so while you may think it's self-serving for me to tell you the employer pay more, that's the only way we're going to get the level of applicants, the quality of applicants you want is by being competitive in the market, and having that data is huge. I want to switch gears though from the job advertising to social media. So clearly social recruiting is huge. Every staffing company that we know of is working on improving their social media strategies. So Brad Biley, from a social perspective, looking at 2021, how should staffing companies start thinking about social and recruiting?
I'm gonna steal a line from Matt Lozar here and really say that social media is more about employer branding than actual, you know, direct response. We were talking on Insights a couple episodes ago, and a lot of people post jobs on social thinking, hey, we can get more people to apply, and they're using social as this megaphone approach. And yes, it certainly can drive applications and it can drive that direct response. We've seen it drive direct response, but social media can be so much more than that. And I think that that's the point that I want to make here is you can have a great employer brand and showcase that on social media. Use social to your advantage. Showcase what it's like to work for you. Showcase what it's like to be a part of your team. Showcase what it's like to work with your recruiters and work with your staff and advertise that and really boast about that. And that's where people start to become more comfortable with you. You know, showcase testimonials, showcase those wins and case studies on social media and start to use that content so that you're trusted in your local market, so that when somebody is looking for their next job, they know to come to you instead of your local competitor. You know, yes, we can say you need to double down on Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn and any other platform, but they're all just platforms. And the theory behind that is more important than the actual platform that you're on. Matt, did I do a good job there, man? I kind of stole that take from you.
You did. And it struck a chord with me on, and also what Brad Smith said a little earlier about reskilling employees, where I know a company, Hospitality Staffing Solutions, their world was hit hard. Hospitality was hit as hard, if not hardest, of any industry out there. And they pivoted a lot of their job orders from hospitality, traditional hospitality, like hotel jobs, to cleaners. And because a lot of facilities need additional cleaning, especially in the beginning of pandemic and now as it moves on. But they showcased a video about it, which they showed on their website. But then that's a great way on social media to show your brand. When the chips were down, our employees had no jobs. We found them jobs and we reskilled them. We taught them the hard skills you needed, but all of those soft skills that transfer from multiple jobs, this is how we help them stay with a job and stay in work so they can continue to have a paycheck. And that's the content you can share anywhere on socials, great, but it showcases that employer brand and how you're there for your company and your, excuse me, when your employees, when the playbook got thrown out the window.
Matt, you mentioned, and, talk specifically about hospitality. How about other sectors? What are you seeing in terms of recruiting trends for light industrial versus healthcare versus technology?
It's similar. I think, you know, light industrial, I think making them feel safe, because that's a very important part right now, is important. Anything you can do with site visits, I think would be awesome content to share. And a lot of this, as we're talking about, revolves around video, which doesn't need to be a professionally produced 2-minute video that you spend tens of thousands of dollars on. There are tools right here, right? An iPhone that you can just record, and it's going to be as good as any piece of equipment you would spend money on. There's some great tools you can brand it with and share it on social. But with light industrial, you know, I think a site visit could be a great content. In healthcare, relationships with recruiters works really well, especially in the travel space. I think I saw on SIA that travel nursing's the biggest sector in healthcare right now, and relationship with your recruiter is enormous. So what can you do to brand, you know, develop the personal brand of your recruiters so they can work with your clients? And on the IT side, you know, that's one of the industries that stayed pretty constant, and they're a tough industry to crack, but I think showing the projects they can work on and the impact they can make, because they're all traditionally 12, 18 month assignments, showcase that and let them decide if that's a place they want to come work and share their knowledge.
Great, thanks. One other question I want to ask, we were talking a little bit about job advertising, but this is the time of year for a lot of renewals with the job boards, and people hear about the new rates for the new year, and very often there's some pressure to increase the size of the contracts that staffing companies have with the job boards. So what are some of the trends, Matt, that you're seeing from the job board companies?
That's a good question. The job board companies it's an interesting place right now, because like we said, job orders are up, but unemployment was up, but a lot of people aren't looking for jobs. And I think one of the biggest trends to make sure when budgets are tighter is to leverage the data and automation as much as possible. To me, I think it's really important to look at your data and automation, and programmatic job advertising is big in, a buzzword in the industry right now. And at the end of the day, all programmatic means is automated purchasing through software. It's not job advertising specific. It's used outside of the industry all the time. And I think it's really important to make sure to know how to use the job boards correctly, so you're not wasting money to where a couple of jobs are eating up a 50% of your budget and it's not helping you fill all those open job orders. I think it's really important to know how to set your budget correctly to maintain flexibility on your side and keep that flexibility with you, because 2020 is the perfect example, unfortunately. If you had a year-long contract and March 13th came and you were really scared, you got to pay that bill for the next 10 to 12 months. So I think finding ways to keep flexibility, to keep data on your side and make the best decisions will help you get the most ROI out of your recruitment budget, and programmatic job advertising is a great way to combine those two thoughts and make sure you get the most ROI on your side.
Yeah, and you talk about programmatic, and I've noticed that there's a lot of confusion being caused by some of the companies that sell programmatic services about what programmatic is and what it isn't. And one of the things that I've noticed is there's two very different solutions being lumped together as the same thing. So solution number one is there's a few players, PandoLogic, AppCast, and Recruitix, that have their own network of career sites. PandoLogic, they work with a lot of the companies that were the newspapers. AppCast has the AppCast Exchange that has a very big group of job boards. And what they're selling there is, just like I place an ad on Indeed, I'm placing an ad into this network, but then the software decides where in that network to put my ad. That's the first way to use programmatic as another channel to advertise jobs. And in general, this is not an absolute, but in general, you know, we're seeing that the cost per application tends to be higher through those other networks, but it may bring in candidates that you're not getting from the other networks. So it can be absolutely worthwhile to test. The other way to use programmatic is to take what you're already spending on the big boards and Indeed and on Zip and to better manage that spend. And Matt, maybe you can talk a little bit about what you do, because I know you do a lot of this management with this type of programmatic, and how it's not about getting access to new sites. It's about improving the ROI on the money you're already spending. What do you do?
That's exactly what we want to do, is improve that ROI. And it's a couple of examples that jump off the top of my head. It's making sure, let's say you're advertising 50 or 100 jobs. You want to make sure you eliminate wasted spend. And what I mean by wasted spend is you might have 100 jobs and two or three of them are spending 60% of your budget. And your recruiters probably don't need that many applications for those certain jobs. So there are ways to group your jobs to make sure, to put rules on your jobs to make sure the budget gets applied appropriately. And the best way to really leverage this way of programmatic job advertising is to look at your recruitment goals. And for some companies, it's centralizing the spend based on branch or franchise location. It could be basing it on industry. I had a call with a client today that's 80% light industrial, 20% clerical, right? So maybe that's how you have to break down your budget. And you teach the software, this is what we want to do to meet our recruiting goals, right? We want to put 80% of our budget on light industrial, 20% on clerical, and only get 20 applications per job. And let it go to work, because it's going to work faster than any human can. It's going to take a lot of repetitive tasks off your team's hands and give them more time to spend talking to the people who want to work for you. And with recruiting continually to being a constant challenge, anything we can do to help set the budget on your end, to keep control of the budget on your end and not let the job board set your budget, you're going to find a lot better ROI. And we've seen it with companies. There's an industrial company in Northeast Ohio to where we lowered their job spend budget by about 16%, and their applications went up by over 60%, all through the automation, all through the technology, teaching the software to meet their recruiting goals, and their Indeed spend went down by almost $500 a month. So it's how do we leverage that to really get more ROI out of what you're doing already?
Yeah, and I was talking to another company in the Bay Area that does healthcare, and I actually just learned last week, I didn't know this, because it was a similar one. They were spending about $3,000 a month using the software. We were able to decrease their spend and just about double their number of applications. And what I didn't know is the CEO of the company told me last week, he goes, you didn't just save us a couple hundred bucks a month. You saved me $2,000 a month, because I was about to sign a contract to go from $3,000 to $5,000 a month, thinking we needed to spend that. All right, guys, before we move off of recruiting, any other last tips you want to give to our audience to help boost recruiting in 2021?
There was one that just has stuck in my head over the last few weeks, and this is going back 2 or 3 years. I heard one of the ATS companies who recently got acquired, their CEO said that based on their data, a candidate is only viable in your database for 2 weeks. So after that 2 week time, the chance of you placing them goes down exponentially each day after that. So, you know, my tip is really to look at the people that you are getting in. You need to make sure that you have a position ready, waiting, and available for them. And do everything that you can to eliminate hurdles, obstacles, everything else to make that experience as quick and effective and efficient as possible. So it's going to be better for the candidate, it's going to be better for the client, and it's going to be better for you because you're going to fill more job orders.
Thanks, Brad. Anybody else? All right, before we move on, I've got one last one here, and that's looking at your website. And we think of recruiting as an external function, advertising, social media. But look at your website, and what we find for most staffing websites is there's vast amounts of traffic that hit a staffing company's website. I'm talking thousands to tens of thousands to, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of people a month who don't take an action. And what I want people to do is look at their website, and if you can, go into Google Analytics and look at where people come into your website and where they leave, the entry pages and the exit pages. So you want to figure out is where are we losing people? Are they coming into our homepage? Are they coming in from a blog post? Are they going directly into a job post? And are they then leaving from that same page? Or have we done something to get them to take action? And this is called conversion path optimization. We're thinking about the path from where they come in to where they leave. And where you want someone to leave is right after they've finished filling out a job application. They've finished a contact form. They've pressed the button to call your office. And if you have people leaving sooner, which most websites are going to have most people leaving sooner, then figure out what can we do to try to entice people to take the next step, or what can we do to get them to give us an email address, to opt in for a job alert, or just to simply tag their smart device or their PC with a cookie so we can advertise to them so we can bring them back. Because if we can reduce the amount of loss of candidates visiting the website, that will allow you to fill more job orders without spending a dime more on job advertising. All right, let's move on now and let's start to talk about selling. So selling staffing has probably never been more challenging than it has been in 2020. We're a relationship-driven industry. Our salespeople like to go talk to customers face-to-face. I mean, I always love the stories of salespeople who said, yeah, I never get in the front door, so I run around to the loading dock and I go right into the warehouse. I mean, I love the way our industry is creative in selling. But with shutdowns, with the prohibition of walking in to buildings, selling's gotten a lot harder. Brad, either one of you can take this first. What are some of the biggest sales challenges you're seeing clients face?
I can tackle this first. So one, David, you hit the nail on the head. We're so used to doing cold visits as an industry, doing the drop by, dropping something off, getting face to face. That's been eliminated. So it's really choosing and using the right tech. So what I'm seeing right now in the industry is a lot of sales reps relying solely on email or voicemail, things like that. We need to take into account Zoom, video email, better automation, other tools like that to really stand out from the competition. The next thing that I think we need to do is do a better job of educating our sales reps on how to overcome objections. So a lot of companies out there right now are tight with their budget. They've reduced hiring. They've eliminated any new employees. Well, a lot of staffing salespeople aren't really equipped to have a more strategic conversation about cost management and control, converting fixed costs over to variable, and how to be more strategic. So we need to create some strategic materials, messaging, talking points, presentations to help them with that. I also, going along with this, see sales reps give up too soon. So a few years back, it was 7 to 8 contacts before you made an appointment or had a conversation. Now it's 20 to 30. If you look at 2021, I'm sure that number's even higher because of COVID, the pandemic, everything else. So what can we do to automate some of our marketing and sales outreach touches to stay in front of them when they do have, you know, an issue, and make sure that we're the first call.
I think giving up too early is spot on. And David, I know you're a big sink and grow rich guy. And there's that whole story about quitting too early before striking gold, right? And an overwhelming majority of people that are reaching out one-to-one on LinkedIn or are reaching out on social media are expecting that to be the end all solution. That's only one touch point. Brad, to your point, if it's 20 or 30 touch points before your outreach turns into a conversation or turns into a quantifiable lead, you need to make sure that you're surrounding that individual with other marketing materials, making sure that you're sending them good content, you're sending them good resources, you're integrating direct mail, you're integrating email, social. You have this web, and it's not just reaching out on LinkedIn. And as soon as somebody connects saying, hey, can I tell you about my services? There is no bigger way to get somebody to run away from you than to just immediately try to sell to them. And we know that offline, but I see time and time again with social, people almost lose that mentality. And instead, they jump right into the sales tactic.
So, Brad, actually, you bring up a great topic there. And I'm sure you're all seeing a huge explosion of LinkedIn marketing automation. So you get invitations to connect from people that you've never heard of. You accept the request, and 30 seconds later, you're hit with a sales pitch. Brad, kind of building on what you're just talking about on LinkedIn, what's your thought on you know, that automated outreach on LinkedIn something? Should people look at it for 2021 or just run for the hills?
I think there's the fine line of strategic automation and automating just to do it. And I've actually seen a lot of posts about people that are now putting emojis at the beginning of their LinkedIn profile, because if that's the first thing you have, if somebody uses automation, that'll show up in that hi smiley face emoji. And you know immediately that it's fake. It's not somebody actually reaching out to you. So people are getting smarter with that. And I think automation is a great idea. Matt, you talk about automation all the time from a recruitment marketing standpoint, but there's a fine line of what are you automating to make your day-to-day easier, more productive, more efficient, and actually drive success. In what sort of automation are you deploying? That's just flat out annoying. And I think you need to figure out what that balance is.
Awesome. Thank you. Next question is one I'm going to take, and guys, feel free to build on this after I do, is, you know, when it comes to business development next year, what should be on the roadmap for every staffing company? And Brett Smith, you kind of gave an indication of it. It's, to me, it's process and a reason to talk. So you mentioned it going from 7 to 10 touch points to 20 to 30. I know I've heard Tom Erb and Mike Jacotot give sales presentations, and they're both saying structured sequence of touches, 12 to 16 steps. One of the things that they're both saying, though, is it's almost all email and occasionally pick up the phone based. My recommendation in the game plan for next year from a selling standpoint is to think about how to differentiate your sales process. You need to have the structured sequence of steps, just like Tom and Mike and Brad have recommended. You have to plan lots of different touches. But when thinking about reaching out to people, you have to be creative and think from the recipient's perspective. Every time you email, every time you call, every time you send a LinkedIn message, you're interrupting someone's day. So how do you make that interruption worthwhile from their perspective? Can you share some market data? Can you share a tip related to hiring or staffing? Can you share information that addresses a problem that has nothing to do with staffing? The idea is you're trying to think of touch points that demonstrate, I understand the customer, the audience, the individual I'm targeting. I know something about their business, their industry, so I'm really making my campaigns targeted to specific types of businesses. Ideally, I've added personalization, so I'm even more specifically targeting the individual I'm going after. And I'm using content to create reasons for follow-up calls. So part of that process is always pick up the phone, and there should be multiple points in that multi-step process where the salesperson knows at this step I call, at this step I call, and at this step I call. And they know what to say, but the reason to talk should build on the content you've shared. So you're not having a question to try to open it about a staffing need, because that usually is met with a lot of resistance. You're having a question that deals with a problem, an interest, an aspiration of the specific type of person you're marketing to. So if it's an HR manager, you know what their goals and objectives are, and you know what their headaches are, you're addressing those in the outreach that's tied to the content you've shared. And you make the assumption with this process, which we call integrated direct marketing, you make the assumption most people aren't going to respond at any one step. So then I have to continue on in the process with more content to nurture, more attempts to follow up, and multiple channels of communication. We see everybody wants to use email or LinkedIn, but the best outreach programs will integrate traditional mail, still works really well, email, social outreach, and that could be LinkedIn, can be Facebook, can be Twitter, it depends on where your customers are, and the telephone. And as you build relationships with people, you may start to also incorporate texting along with that. The idea is you're creating the structured process, 12, 16, 20 to 30 touch points. The salesperson knows where they follow up, but you're demonstrating a commitment to follow up. You're demonstrating your expertise. You're positioning yourself the way you want to be seen, and you're creating lots of opportunities for really good conversations. So that's on my must-have list for 2021. Guys, what else do you have on your must-have list for selling next year?
One thing that I love that you said, David, is when you're selling, you're interrupting somebody's day. So you better damn well have a good reason to interrupt their day. And we were brainstorming the other day, and Mike McKerns from our team said, you know, our most popular content is often a tool that makes somebody's job easier. So think about what you can do to make the person that you're interrupting, make their day easier, solve a specific problem they have. Is there a tool, a form, a worksheet, a tip, a strategy that you can share and add value? And then it doesn't become a sales call, it becomes a consulting call.
Awesome. Brad, while you're talking, I want to keep you on for a second. So I know SEO, search engine optimization, has been a big topic for many of our clients for years. I think this year it's gotten bigger than ever. So when it comes to a roadmap for SEO for 2021, what should staffing companies do?
Yeah, it's been a biggie. We've seen a lot of great results from it. And especially as more and more people are going remote and using, you know, search, it's become really effective at driving new business development and recruitment. I think you need to start with a strong foundation. So you need to make sure that your website is healthy, it's fast, it's secure, there's no broken links, that type of thing. That's kind of just table stakes. You need to make sure that each static page is optimized. But then beyond that, you need to be active and look at analytics. So you need to look at what the user experience is like and work on pages that have high bounce or exit rates. So adjust call to action, adjust content on page, and fix those because Google's looking at user experience once they get to your site. You need to look at Google Search Console and see where you have opportunity. So I can use that to see where we show up in search results, what position we show up, and then strategically work towards improving rank and securing more of that traffic. And then it's looking at a content strategy. So I love the idea of what we call long form or pillar content. It's text-based content that's 3,000 plus words that really digs deep into a specific topic. And then I like to supplement that with short form content. So blog posts or articles that are 300 to 500 words that break that big piece or big topic down into bite-sized pieces and then interlink all of those together. This has been really, really effective. And then I love to steal traffic from competitors. So I use a tool called SEMrush to compare, you know, our client's site to their biggest competitors in the market, see where they're ranking well, what pages or content ranks well. Then we can reverse engineer and leapfrog them. So we can outrank them over time, steal their traffic. It's been really, really effective.
Awesome. Brad, with Google sort of like taking away that whole top part of search results. So having ads, having the knowledge graph, having, you know, where they're answering questions basically before the click, is SEO still valuable?
Yeah, it's extremely valuable, but you have to craft your content in the right way. So you mentioned everything that shows up before actual search results, that's spot zero. So, you know, it used to be like the holy grail was getting to the first spot in Google search results. It's really getting to spot zero, which is that knowledge graph, which is a featured snippet. So writing content in a way that answers a specific search query can leapfrog you even above ads in many cases, right, and gets you the majority of that traffic. I've got clients that will write a piece of content that earns one of those featured snippets, and all of a sudden they're getting 800, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 views on that topic. We wrote a piece for a client in January and it systematically has grown because it answers a lot of questions. And we went from 20, 30, 40 to 200 visits a day. And then we peaked at 1,100 visits in one day to one specific blog post just because of that.
That's wild.
Awesome. Kind of related to SEO is sort of the counterbalance of paid advertising. And this year, I know our team's been doing a ton of performance or paid advertising, PPC. And these strategies have been effective for both recruiting and sales. Who'd like to talk a little bit about PPC and what staffing companies should look to do with it next year?
I can start here, guys. From a PPC standpoint, I think it really starts with understanding what you're trying to achieve with your ads and having a good understanding of the purpose for that ad. You know, I say every day, and I'm sure the team's sick of it, that every post has to have a purpose. I think every ad has to have a purpose too. And you need to know what you're trying to achieve. Are you trying to achieve a lead from that pay-per-click advertising? Are you trying to funnel somebody to take action? Or are you running brand awareness ads? Are you running those billboard ads that are meant to surround individuals with your branding? You know, you can have advertising in New York City, right? You can have your ad on a billboard. What's the intent of that ad? Well, it's to have brand awareness. It's to stay visible and it's to have your organization top of mind. So from a PPC standpoint, as we look at 2021, I think we need to get smarter with what results we're looking at from every campaign that we're running. Are we trying to drive leads? Are we trying to promote brand awareness? Are we trying to do what? And really defining that and then looking at the results accordingly. Matt, Brad, what do you guys agree with that or disagree?
I think you're spot on, Brad. It's vitally important when you start a pay-per-click campaign and you know what the goal is, because a lot of people buy the bill, and it's actually better than traditional billboard advertising, right? If you buy a billboard down the road, you have no idea what the metrics are, really, at the end of the day. If you buy an advertisement on Facebook or Google, you're going to get impressions and clicks and know some data. But it, as Brad said here, it's important. There was a trucking company I was working with in California, and we invested in some pay-per-click brand awareness. And I told them, I said, this is not going to lead to job applications, but it will lead to a lot of impressions. To make sure upfront there were no surprises a month, 3 months in on the results when zero applications came, but 100,000 impressions a month came. So their brand was getting out there. It's important to know those goals before you get into any marketing, but especially on a pay-per-click side, to know what should be coming from your investment.
And we talked about earlier too, we need 20 to 30 touches. Let's use PPC impression-based ads to knock out 5, 10, 20 of those so that your salespeople can be way more effective and make those impressions and those calls count.
Yeah, you can really use those touches to reinforce your positioning, strengthen your brand, share testimonials, case studies. They're like, I don't want to say advertising in the sense of direct response, but advertising in the sense of, as I see that on part of Google's display network, or I see it in social media, I may just be scrolling past the ad. So I got to quickly get the message like a billboard of what your company is all about. Another relevant trend on the sales side is content marketing. So we've been doing content marketing since 1996, day one we started, but now everybody's doing content marketing. So blogging, white papers, webinars, et cetera. Has content marketing become overdone, or is it a cost of business? And if everybody's doing it, does it make sense to focus on next year? Who wants to take that one?
I can chime in. Who's going to jump on that one?
Go ahead, Brett.
Honestly, I think it is becoming a cost of doing business, right? Just like, you know, years ago, it was, you had to have a website as a cost of doing business. You need to be active on your site, and you need to turn it into something more than a brochure. I think that the reason that you need to continue to do it, even though everybody else is doing it, is that everybody else isn't doing it effectively or using it in the right way. So there's a small majority of companies, especially in the staffing industry, that are producing great white papers and content, that are producing long form pillar content, like I talked about earlier, that are writing content very strategically around a user's search query and their biggest questions that they need answers to. A lot of companies are just going and by gut and saying, hey, I'm going to write a post about X, Y, or Z. The content marketers that use data to make better decisions on what they're going to write about are the ones that are really effective. And then once you do write a great piece of content that's a home run and it kind of goes viral, it's thinking about how you build off of that. So what can we do to break that down into individual bite-sized pieces? Can we turn that content into 20 social posts that all link back to it? Can we create a podcast out of it? Can we create a video out of it? Can we create a sales message or a sales video email about it? Can we get that up on YouTube as a video article? So there's so much we can do with content marketing beyond just writing a blog post on a site. It's really getting strategic about it.
Thanks, Wynton. Little quick pitch. I mean, one of the things that I love, you know, a lot of people know that we merged with the guys from Mamo Media this past February. And one of the reasons we did that is they were creating really good long format content, magazines, webinars that were extremely affordable because creating that stuff from scratch can get to be very expensive. Okay, end of sales pitch. All right, guys, and I know we could talk about these first two sections forever, but we're going to run out of time. So I want to move on to section three, marketing technology. And I've seen a number of technology leaders say that 2020 has advanced digital transformation 10 years faster than most people expected. From a marketing perspective, we're certainly seeing clients integrate a lot of tech into their marketing, into their service process. Guys, what technologies are you seeing that are having the greatest impact?
Matt, that's your world, bud. You want to start there?
It's mine on the recruitment side. We've talked about programmatic job advertising a lot. We haven't talked about chatbots, which I think when used correctly can work really well. I don't, you know, there's been the whole talk about AI and artificial intelligence, and it seemed to die down recently, but I think leveraging a chatbot on your website to capture leads, similar to how we have to direct someone to a sales side or support side to help with their problem or question, really can work really well. So I think a chatbot can work well. And I think we have this a little later, but, you know, not to get into specific options, you know, process automation or keeping candidates engaged is literally being talked about by almost every marketing director or company that we talk to from a sensor hearfish standpoint. So those are the areas from a recruitment side that I think can work really well to help you advance that digital transformation of your staffing company.
Oh, Matt, you totally stole mine. So like the whole conversational systems and marketing going from the synchronous communication one way to, excuse me, asynchronous communication one way to synchronous, where we're having either via a bot or a live operator getting into more of that real-time chatting. I know one of our clients down in Texas said, you know, that their number one source of new business is when they notice somebody comes to their website and clicks the chatbot to say, I need to hire. Within 60 seconds, a recruiter jumps over the bot and turns it into live chat, and their conversion rate on those inquiries is near perfect. So they have great results from using conversational systems to facilitate selling. Guys, any other technologies that you want to highlight? I know we got a couple other questions related to it coming up.
So David, this one isn't new by any means, but is really impactful. You need to make sure that you have a job site or a career portal that has the right schema markup on it and is getting indexed by Google for jobs. I was on a phone with a client today who's, they're getting 5,000 applications from Google for jobs a month. It's amazing. And we need to make sure that we are optimized there and using the right tech.
For me, I don't have any specifics, but I think the best technology reduces friction for both the candidate, prospect, and also your team. There's a reason that Amazon is a powerhouse in the, you know, consumer world. It's two clicks from your phone to buy a product, and it's also super easy to sell on Amazon. And therefore, it's a perfect solution. So for me in 2021, it's thinking through what technology will make it easier and more efficient for your team to source candidates, screen candidates, go through that side of the business. But what tech also makes it incredibly efficient and easy for a candidate or a prospect to get a hold of you when they need to?
Awesome. Thanks, Brad. All right. This one's going to be interesting. A few weeks ago, I think the whole industry sort of became aware of Indeed's entry into the online staffing world with their new product, Indeed Flex. So what does Indeed Flex mean for the industry? And do all staffing companies now need to have an app?
This is a scary one. So I'm hoping that Indeed Flex goes the way of Uber Works and doesn't get traction and kind of disappears. But I have a feeling that Indeed's going to put some more budget behind it. So does every company need an app? I don't think so. But I think every company needs to take a hard look at their candidate experience and what they can do to eliminate friction there. So I think the app is going to apply to gig workers, somebody that's looking for quick, short assignments. For many staffing companies listening on this, you got to decide whether or not that really fits into your business mix, or if you're in a different area or vertical. If you're in a different area, then does an app make sense? Probably not. But you still need to look at eliminating any candidate friction there is at all. Because that's what this app really does, or this tool is, it eliminates friction and puts a person in a seat as quickly as humanly possible.
Yeah, I think the apps make a lot of sense when they enhance the service experience for the client or the candidate. So like time entry can be a real pain in the butt. So an app can make time entry, the submission and the approval, far easier. Candidate communication, an app can enhance candidate communication with in-app messaging. But the idea that, you know, a candidate's going to download 20 different staffing company apps to look for opportunities, I think that's questionable. Or that an employer who needs 50 people on site tomorrow is going to go to an app to get it done. Sure, they can. But if I'm in HR and my butt's on the line by getting the right people, I'd rather put the staffing company's butt on the line by calling them than having all the responsibility because I use the app to do it all myself. So I think time will tell where the apps go. But I think everybody in 2021 needs to look at, sort of as Brad said, how do they play into the service experience that you want to deliver and how can you use them to reduce friction? Speaking of technologies, you know, there's a lot of talk about the tech stack, and you know, we talk about the marketing tech stack. So for 2021, what are some of the must-have marketing technologies staffing companies should be evaluating? Who wants to kick that one off?
I'll start with an easy one, and I don't think we can underestimate video. You know, it's easy on social, but we're seeing so much success from clients internally with trying to get new business to nurture leads by creating short videos to send over to them. It could be through a platform, you know, you can record right on your computer and it goes to their email address. It's a way to help with that, not automation, but, you know, really helps with the one-to-one reach out. And with being in this remote world, which is definitely going to continue for the start of 2021 and be more prevalent regardless of how this shakes out, that human quick touch point of a video could really nurture your relationship with companies. And it's a very low cost or even no cost answer to more touch points.
Thanks, Matt.
Going virtual too made video more efficient, right? People are always on Zoom now. I think I've had more client calls on Zoom than I have actual phone calls in the past month or two. So everyone's comfortable on video now. So it makes that barrier to entry much lower. David, for me, I think it's adding a chatbot. I'm going to double down on chatbots. I think it adds efficiencies for both prospects and potential candidates to ask questions, whether that's guided or actually, you know, being responded to during certain hours. But they can ask questions without actually picking up the phone, and they can be guided to take action based on that path when they want to, where they want to, how they want to. I think it just makes it a lot easier for both audiences.
Thanks, Brad.
For me, I'm going to reiterate one that I just said. It's your career portal and making sure that has the right schema markup and is optimized to get your jobs out to the right places. And it's simple and easy for candidates to apply. And then we talked about this earlier too, the candidate automation, like Sense, Here, Fish platforms, I think are huge. But even getting beyond that, and what can we do to automate processes for sales and business dev? So carry over some of those methodologies into our sales outreach.
Yeah, I'm going to build on that with the marketing automation. So I know a lot of people know HubSpot, fantastic product. Depending on how big your database is and how many people you need using, it can get very expensive. We are actually about to convert our company over to ActiveCampaign because it can do really advanced marketing automation. So now we can integrate our website with our marketing outreach with our sales team to have better conversations with people who are interested in our services, who are consuming content on our websites, do more to convert website visitors into active prospects. You can do the exact same thing in your business to think about candidates who are visiting, looking at jobs or reading your blog, clients who are looking for information on market data or even about your services. And then how do we use the marketing automation in conjunction with that conversion path optimization to maximize people going through your funnel from prospect to client or from passive job seeker to placed candidate. All right, let's move on to our fourth and final section. What do we miss? So far, we've talked about recruiting, sales, and technology. We've drilled in a bit on some specific marketing topics like content, SEO, PPC, social. What haven't we covered?
I got one that we've talked a lot about in the past is your reputation. So people want to validate whether or not they're making the right choice. And especially with being more remote now, online validation is becoming really important. So building your online reviews on Google, Facebook, Indeed, other places, and really putting that to work for you.
That became a challenge. When the pandemic started, a lot of people were going to leave negative reviews because they got laid off. So managing that, and we're starting to come out of that with not mass layoffs all the time, but really taking a look at your social sites and realizing it's not just what you're saying, it's what other people are hearing. So that's important to manage and have a proactive strategy for managing that reputation online.
Hey, Brad, we haven't talked a lot about social in this. So what's, in a few words, what are the most important things for social in 2021?
For me, putting out great content. Great content will always cut through the clutter, regardless if it's a graphic, a video, a blog article, whatever it might be. Great content is always going to cut through the clutter. So as we look at 2021, it's really leaning into having the best content that is visible on social.
I just want to add one small thing to that too, paid. Yep. So, yep. You can have great content, put a little paid in front of it to begin with and get some traction, and then it'll start growing from there.
So one of the ones I've mentioned a couple of times is websites. So for staffing companies, websites, anybody who's evaluating their website right now and looking at next year, what do they need to worry about in 2021?
I don't know if it's a worry. It's a concern for me, is it's not being mobile friendly. Applicants, prospects, candidates, regardless of audience, people are using their phones more than ever. And people want to engage with organizations, companies, how they want to, where they want to. If your website isn't mobile optimized, isn't efficient, if people can't contact you or get a hold of you or apply to a job on their phone, you're really missing a huge, huge opportunity.
Awesome. I was going to add also, we're thinking it's not really a website anymore. It's another office. It's your digital office. And it's one that has to be available to people 24/7. So you really need to think about, how does your website deliver service, whether it's through chat, whether it's through self-service, how does it deliver that 24/7 client candidate experience?
And for me, it's SEO to get visible. Capture attention and drive traffic. And then it's looking at Google Analytics and data to look at conversion path, conversion flow, and where you're losing leads out of the bottom of the funnel.
Matt, anything you want to add to the mix before we move on?
No, they hit it pretty well. I think, the mobile and making sure you're taking advantage of all those leads. We talked about conversion path optimization. If you're paying for people to get to your website, don't have them be frustrated. Make sure you make it easy for them to convert.
All right. And that brings us to, in our final 2 minutes, the lightning round. Let's bring it home. All right, guys, we're just going to go around the horn. Favorite marketing technology?
I'm going to stick with people and say marketing automation that nurtures leads.
You got Chatbot. I'm going to go Google Search Console. So much great info.
I'm going with Elementor, the way we're doing page builders now. So non-technical people can do really sophisticated things with editing websites. All right, next one. Can't live without app.
I'm embarrassed to say this, but for me right now, it's TikTok.
I knew it was coming too.
Because throughout the day, sometimes I'll shoot Brad and Matt a silly TikTok video that I ran across. But for real, I think the podcast app on my phone, love listening and getting a lot of knowledge that way.
I'm also going to relate. I can't get enough of TikTok lately. From a business standpoint, I think it's going to be Facebook Messenger. I have a buddy here in Buffalo who does 98% of his business out of Facebook Messenger. Doesn't have a website, is just selling and doing business directly out of Facebook Messenger. I think staffing firms that double down on that can really have good advantages too.
Almost as embarrassed as Brad Smith with TikTok, but I'll still stick to Twitter. It's my one addiction to get news, but I say it's only for sports.
And my embarrassing admission here is Words with Friends, which I'm sadly really addicted to. Huh. And then the other app that, speaking of addictions, is my email app. I could not live without it. All right. Next one. What's the biggest return on investment marketing someone can do?
Direct for me, it's job advertisements. If you got to make sure you have the right data in there, if it's through programmatic, if it's through another automated system, you can get ROI on that tomorrow.
Brad, you want to go?
Yeah, I was just going to say, for me, there isn't one silver bullet. So it's kind of a loaded question. It really depends on your situation. If you're going to force me to pick one right now, as of today, I'm going to say SEO, because I think it has longstanding benefits and I don't see remote going away anytime soon. So I think people are going to rely on it more.
since Brad took SEO, I'm going to say database management, and whether that's email or text, really nurturing that database that you have.
Yeah, I'm going with website, which was something staffing industry analysts did years ago. They said that was the biggest ROI marketing investment then, and I think it still is today. Although, Matt, I'm going to agree with you. An investment in programmatic advertising to manage that spend can pay the results the fastest. All right, biggest mistake staffing companies make in marketing?
I can start us off. I think it's lack of consistency in process, or given up before 20 to 30 touches. And also just waiting. If you want to have a great 2021 and you're going to wait until Q2 to kick it off, it's not going to happen. You need to start now.
To me, it's not using data. We're still relying on gut instinct a lot. So collect the data and make sure you know how to manage it and make decisions off of it.
And for me, it's looking at other industries and just trying to copy. So the Bills are doing this, or the Sabres are doing this, so we have to do this. They're doing things that are in line with their goals. You need to do things that are in line with your goals.
Yeah, mine's sort of related to that. It's tactics over strategy. We see the next shiny thing and we want to do it. So rather than thinking about how does it fit into the bigger picture strategy, we throw money or time to use the latest tool rather than putting it into our strategic marketing mix. Which brings us to our very final lightning round question. Your one best marketing tip for 2021.
I'll start us off again first, I guess. I'm going to say getting buy-in and engagement across the entire company. So I look at marketing as really training your target audience. And if you're going to effectively train your target audience, your internal team needs to be effectively trained. So bring them up to speed on what the strategy is, what the tactics are, what the tools are, how to use them effectively, and model it for them.
This is interesting. We've talked a lot about staying the course, but I think being flexible, and by being flexible, it could be with your job advertising budget. It could be with your content. I mean, this year you had to pivot on March 13th faster than ever. So having flexibility in your marketing the right way will lead to better results.
This might sound self-serving, but I think it's having a conversation with us or somebody else in the marketing space, right? So lean into experts, lean into individuals who are in that marketing world and ask for advice, ask for suggestions, read content, do your due diligence instead of just deploying a tactic. Look bigger picture and lean on individuals for some advice and for some support.
Well, Brad, mine's very similar, and it's really about being strategic, creating a, we call it a roadmap, but really a game plan for your marketing where you're thinking about starting with what are my goals? What are the best strategies for accomplishing those goals? Then what tactics do I pick? And then budgeting appropriately. Most staffing companies, as a percent of revenue, grossly underspend almost every other industry, but we'll go hire more salespeople before we put more marketing in place to support our current salespeople. We'll hire more recruiters before we put a better game plan in place for how we do job advertising. So be strategic, use your budget wisely. All right, guys, thank you very much. I think that was terrific. I really appreciate all of your expertise. For everybody who's been listening in, thank you so much. I mentioned a roadmap. Brad mentioned talking to somebody who can give you help. We'd love to help. If you're interested in a 2021 roadmap, it's something we do. It's a courtesy service. We'd love to talk to you. You can reach us at 888-696-2900 or info@haleymarketing.com. And we'd be happy to talk to you about a game plan for next year. And we do have one last webinar coming up next week, a product demo. A lot of you may have heard of our NetSocial product, our new software for automating social media. And we're also going to talk about that in contrast and comparison to our Social Pro managed social media services and how those two services are different and go hand in hand. And we're going to show both of them off next Tuesday, December 15th at 2 o'clock. So from all of us at Haley Marketing, thank you so much for being part of this, our last Lunch with Haley of the year. Have a very happy holiday, safe holiday season, and we'll look forward to seeing you on our 2021 Lunch with Haley's.